Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, Fidel Castro, the communist dictator of Cuba, who survived 11 American presidencies, is dead at the age of 90. We'll talk about why his death is not a celebration of many African Americans. We'll have as our guests River Jesse Jackson Sr., Soledad O'Brien, and Bill Fletcher. A black veteran denied a meal at a restaurant and now fears for his life after speaking out about it. He joins us to explain this incredible ordeal. Also, folks, Reverend Dr. William Barber will join us. North Carolina, the battle over voting rights is not over. How the Republican governor is trying to hold on to power, and they're even trying to pack the state Supreme Court because they lost at the ballot box. Wait until we explain what is happening in North Carolina. Also, Monday after Thanksgiving, many of you are probably freaking out, trying to figure out how can you get rid of the excess pounds you packed on. Well, we have a trainer in the house who can help you with that. Also, I sat down with Empire castmates V. Bozeman and Tobias Trevilian to talk about their experience on the hit show and their work with the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. Folks, it's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Folks, for a half century, Fidel Castro held a tight grip on Cuba, defying a CIA-backed invasion, numerous assassination attempts, a U.S. trade embargo, and economic collapse. As his health failed, Castro ceded power to his younger brother, Raul, in 2008. But for most Cubans around the world, until his death on Friday, Fidel Castro was the only leader the country ever knew in the past half decade. He came to power in 1959 after overthrowing the American-backed presidency of Fulgencio Batista, who ran an authoritarian government and was viewed by many as corrupt. After Castro aligned his country with the Soviet Union in 1961, President Kennedy ordered an ill-fated CIA-backed invasion of Cuba. The mission was called the Bay of Pigs, and Castro served up a humiliating defeat for the U.S. A year later, the U.S. and the Soviet Union played a game of nuclear brinkmanship in Cuba. The so-called Cuban Missile Crisis ended when the Soviets agreed to dismantle their nuclear weapons and remove them from Cuba. And President Barack Obama traveled to Cuba this March, the first sitting president to do so in 88 years. In late 2014, he issued an executive order that normalized diplomatic relations with Cuba and eased travel and trade restrictions between the two countries. The president released this statement upon Castro's death. At this time of Fidel Castro's passing, we extend a hand of friendship to the Cuban people. History will record and judge the enormous impact of this singular figure on the people and world around him. During my presidency, we have worked hard to put the past behind us. We offer condolences to Fidel Castro's family, and our thoughts and prayers are with the Cuban people. Now, President-elect Donald Trump released a harsh statement calling Castro a brutal dictator and said his legacy will be one of firing squads, theft, and unimaginable suffering. In Little Havana, in Miami, Cuban Americans celebrated Fidel Castro's death. Many saw their families torn apart after Castro took power and seized property and jailed dissidents. Millions also fled the country. It was an interesting reaction when you look at African Americans. Fidel Castro was seen by many as a leader who was unafraid to stand up against racism in the U.S. and abroad. He fought against racial segregation in Cuba when he came to power. At the height of the civil rights movement in America, Castro met publicly with Malcolm X. He sent Cuban troops to Angola to fight against the apartheid government of South Africa at a time when the U.S. still supported it. And the list goes on and on. He also fought against apartheid in South Africa. So what do we make of these different complex views of Fidel Castro? We've got three guests who can break us down. Joining us via FaceTime from New York City, Soledad O'Brien, the CEO of Starfish Media Group, by telephone from Chicago, Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., founding president, Rainbow Push Coalition, and here in studio, Bill Fletcher Jr., writer and activist, also former leader of TransAfrica. I want to go to Reverend Jackson, start with you first. Reverend, your statement you released ticked off a lot of people. They said it was tone deaf. And how could you make those kind of comments about Fidel Castro? What was your relationship with Castro? How many times did you meet him? And how should we view his legacy?
there were competing legacies about Fidel Castro. One is that his overthrow of Batista, a corrupt dictator, would reduce black Cubans to commodities in that situation facing racial and class segregation. You don't see as many black Cubans in the streets as you see white Cubans in the streets, which was a part of the internal contradiction within that society. On the other hand, his thing against racial defiance in Harlem in 1959, that's 6 years before blacks had the right to vote. That's after 5,000 blacks in this country had been lynched without a single indictment. His staying in the Teresa Hotel in New York when we could not stay in the Holiday Inn or the Marriott or the Hilton in this hotel. Latin American people on the occupation rejoice. South Africans rejoice. In the end, it was his military participation in Angola and Namibia to stop South African expansion. And that's why Mandela rejoiced and thanked him. So you have people who were displaced, understandably upset and angry. We must fight diligently for family reunification. But there are competing legacies, and there's a reason why people who were oppressed identify with this revolution.
Soledad O'Brien, you're a mother, Afro-Cuban. Your perspective as someone whose mother had to contend with Cuba and Castro as a leader.
Yeah, I think Reverend Jackson is right in a lot of ways. I think when Donald Trump describes Castro's only legacy as firing squads and suffering, that is very true, but it's not the full story. And so I think what Jesse Jackson describes is also part of a complete story. Listen, my mother hated Batista, who she grew up under, and hated Castro, and left Cuba just before Castro came into power to go off to college. And I think she thought both of them really destroyed the country. But I think those who don't really fully study what Fidel Castro brought to Cuba, both the horrible things, he was a brutal dictator, and also some of the big things that he brought in terms of healthcare and literacy, those things are often talked about, and even trying to stamp out racial discrimination officially. I don't think he ever was able to do it. And I think if you look at Cuba today, discrimination still exists. But I think that those are conversations that make the understanding of Fidel Castro much more than a binary. He was evil. He was great. I think he was evil. And there are all these other things that he accomplished that are part of his legacy. Now, there are plenty of people who don't want to talk about legacy. They just want to say, here's what he did to my family. And those people I understand. I mean, you know, he killed a lot of people. He led firing squads. And Raul Castro, in many ways, was even more, I think, dangerous and killed a lot more people than Fidel Castro. So I understand those who are not interested in the nuance of legacy, but I think politicians need to try to really understand, because otherwise you don't understand the different perspectives of the Cuban people. Afro-Cubans look at the death of Fidel Castro differently than white Cubans who are in Miami, than Cubans who are in New Jersey, than Cubans who are in New York City. So I think it's important to understand that part of his legacy.
Bill Fletcher, it is interesting when you look at the coverage over the last couple of days, how so much of it is driven by, as Soledad said, the Cubans in Little Havana protesting in the streets. And when I tweeted over the weekend, because I was retweeting Soledad, I was retweeting Reverend Jackson, and I made this comment about Fidel Castro being a complex figure. Mm-hmm. Other folks just lost their mind, but the reality is, it is a complex situation when you say here he provided refuge for a Black Panther who escaped prison, the Shot of Shakur.
Right.
When you also talk about the issue of apartheid, when you talk about offering assistance to the United States after a hurricane, then you talk about people bring up drugs, or they bring up, I mean, you can go down the line. This is a complex world figure. Mm-hmm. Your perspective, your thoughts, had you met him, and if so, your impressions?
I met him in January 99. As part of a delegation the Trans Africa Forum participated in. And this was prior to my becoming president of Trans Africa. And it was absolutely an amazing experience because of the brilliance of this person. Someone who was incredibly knowledgeable. I saw someone write about how much he knew about the U.S. political system, more than probably most people in the United States. But you know, Roland, the thing I would say is this. There's an immense amount of hypocrisy in the United States when it comes to looking at the rest of the world, and certainly when it comes to Cuba. So they talk about Castro allegedly killing all these people. How many people are executed on a regular basis in the United States? I mean, we talk about dissidents. After the American Revolution, thousands of people fled the United States to get away from this great country. Thousands. Yet when we look at history, there's no nuance. There's no analysis. It's either one way or the other. And I think that the discussions about Fidel Castro and the media have been incredibly biased and lack that analysis that would help people understand the types of things that both Reverend Jackson and Soledad are raising.
Reverend Jackson, you negotiated the return of Americans who are being held captive in Cuba. Again, for our audience, just an assessment of what it was like sitting across the table negotiating with Castro, listening to him talk to him. I was, when I interviewed Harry Belafonte, he talked about how a visit with Fidel Castro could last anywhere from 6 to 8 hours because he would hold court that long.
Well, when we last met, or really first met, should I say, in 1984, I was told that Fallon raised three critical issues that this would not be credible. The issue of prisons. I discussed political prisons with him, and he granted the release of 48 Cuban and Cuban American prisoners. Some have been in jail 25 years. We were able to bring them from Havana to Dulles Airport and release them, deposit them, should I say. Secondly, the issue about free press. Which I challenged, but I also realized that before in 1959, there were no black journalists calling the American newspaper across the South, except maybe Ralph McGill, who was white, but who was credible in that anti-Southern racism at that time. This issue about his going to church. He asked me to speak at the university with him. I asked him to go to church with me. He went to me, with me to church for the first time in 27 years. Asked him what happened. He said, as a kid, he grew up in the church to be a priest. And he came back, they got back into the city. He thought the church would be a sanctuary, but the ministers were standing in the courtyard with guns to protect the graveyards of the rich. So he became anti-church, but not enough to bomb it. So I said, but Dr. King and theologians like Bonhoeffer would be on your side of history. He revisited that question and began to open up. And ultimately, the Pope found reconciliation with Castro. That's why I say it's a complex situation. And I can understand those who were left there under either Batista or Castro, but as the fight against occupation and racism and colonialism, he became and remains, frankly, a global hero. And also, I might say that while we were sending guns to Latin America, he was sending doctors. All this country produced the most doctors with a 99% literacy rate that is admired around the world. And right now, I mean, if our doctors are doing research to find that, research from cancer research in Cuba even today.
So that to pick up on on Bill's point.
Things are all true,
go ahead.
I'll do a big but, right? So my mother used to say, Batista would only kill you, right? He was bad, he would only kill you. Castro would kill you, and then he'd make sure that your children could never work, and he'd make sure that your parents didn't have housing, right? Like, there was a certain viciousness that they would describe in how Castro would have neighbors report on neighbors. I remember talking to my cousin on voting day, and he said, this is how it works. So starting in the afternoon, people will come over and say, did you, comrade, vote? And he'll say, no, I didn't vote. He was virulently anti-Castro. And then they'd say, I'm sure you want to vote. And the whole neighborhood would keep tabs. By 2 o'clock in the afternoon, his wife and his mother would be begging, go vote. It'll be so bad for us if you don't vote. This is how you get very high election numbers and participation numbers, right, in Cuba, where everyone seems to be voting for El Presidente. Because the whole thing is having neighbors spy on neighbors and turn people in. I mean, it's vicious. So sure, you can describe a list of things that were done, I think, in improvements in society. And then you have to also say this person was a vicious dictator. And I think the idea of American hypocrisy to some degree is a little bit irrelevant for me because we're not talking about American hypocrisy at this moment. We're talking about, you know, who was Fidel Castro and what did he do to Cubans? And I think the way to explain how the complicated feelings that Cubans have about Fidel Castro, Afro-Cubans or African-Americans have about Fidel Castro, is to really examine the man himself and what he did. But you cannot dismay or dismiss or play down really how vicious he was in ways that some people really consider to be, I'm not sure how to explain this, like almost more psychologically vicious than Batista. Again, you know, Batista would only kill you.
He was all vicious,
but it sounds like a voter in black voter in Mississippi or in Iowa. I remember when I was running, two farmers came to me and with their grandchildren and said, I like what you said very much, but I have to go to a caucus and vote. So I'm with you, but I'm not with you. They had to face their neighbors.
Gotcha.
My grandsons will change. So the way that the fear of voting for their choice was in Cuba, and that's wrong. It was as true in Mississippi
and
Alabama.
Reverend, first of all, I certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Soledad. Thank you so very much as well for joining us. We're going to have more of this tomorrow here on News One Now. I do have to go to a break right now. When we come back, we got to deal with what's happening in North Carolina. We hear from Reverend William Barber about just amazing what Republicans are doing there to hold on to power. That's next on News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, right now we're about to join the Tom Joyner Morning Show. Of course, chat about North Carolina. Trust me, what is happening there is utterly stunning as Republicans still try to hold on to power. And so let's do so right now.
The guess is on hold.
All right, sounds good.
Here we go.
Make sense of political drama. Say a few words and I'll talk your mama. Make everyone mad and steal back Obama.
That's how we do it.
After Maxwell from Washington, D.C., Roland Martin, good morning.
Maxwell, my homeboy. So how did it go?
Oh, man, it was great. It was great. I know you were working. Wait till you listen to it on blackamericaweb.com.
All right, awesome. Then.
It's awesome, man. Live band.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the full band.
Did he
horns
smell,
and everything.
Did he smell that good too, Tom, like he did the last time?
I don't smell Maxwell.
Really,
you don't know what you're missing.
You asked me, Tom, did he smell good?
Yeah, really.
Some questions you don't ask brothers, okay? some questions you just don't ask us. How did the brother smell? I don't know. All right. Tom, of course, we've got... I can't even call him president-elect, but anyway, he's running around tweeting. But North Carolina, we still have significant problems, Tom. Let me tell you what the Republicans are doing there, which is stunning. It's going to blow you away. Of course, the governor lost. He's now fighting it, and he's challenging literally black voting precincts all across North Carolina. But they also lost a majority on the Supreme Court, 4-3. They're now trying to pack the Supreme Court to add two new seats so the governor can appoint them in December before he leaves office so they control the state Supreme Court. Why? Well, Reverend William Barber, NAACP North Carolina Conference Chair, joins us right now. Reverend Barber, it's stunning. I keep saying North Carolina is the Alabama of the 21st century.
You're right. This is our Selma. Hey, good morning, Tom Sybil and Mark Rowland. What these people are doing is incredibly cynical and wrong. Our governor, as you said, lost. We're the only state in the South that held off the Trump tide because we've been building this multiracial moral coalition. They didn't win the governor, the AG, and the Supreme Court. African-American Mike Morgan, who won the Supreme Court, had more votes than the people who won the governor's office and the AG's office. And here's what they're doing. The canvassing process is a normal process. We're all for that because you count provisional ballots. But what they've done is filed bogus complaints claiming voter fraud that local boards are saying they're just wrong. They're not. Every day another local board is saying they're bogus. They did that to slow down the canvassing process because once you get to 10,000 votes, you can't call for a recount. Now the governor is calling for a recount you know, which is fine. He has a right to do that. But he's filed these bogus complaints over and over and over again. And we're fighting it. They're talking about having a special session under the guise of giving more money for flood victims, which should have happened months ago when the flood happened, but then calling a special session and then using the special session to appoint two new persons to the Supreme Court. Why? Because in 2017, the federal courts have already ruled that our districts are discriminatory and they have to be redrawn, and the Supreme Court will oversee that process. And now there's a majority of pro-democratic and progressive majority on the Supreme Court that we haven't had for a while. This is bad. And that's why tonight at 5 o'clock at the state capitol, we're having a no fear, no hate, no stealing our election massive rally. And we're asking all your listeners to join us there at 5 o'clock.
But, Reverend, it even goes beyond that, because not only we're talking about the Supreme Court, in the election, what took place with the AG's race and other positions? Because also, explain to the listeners that whoever is governor will now control the state board of elections.
Exactly. That's, again, we won, and we beat them. They thought that they would, you know, I've told people, Roland, if you want to know what Trump will do, look at what McCrory has done. That's how, you know, that the words will match the deed. But he messed up, and he lost, the AG's office, which means in our state, whoever's the governor controls the state board of election and the local board of election. And then the AG, you know, is the top law enforcement officer. But Roland, there's one other thing they've done. Civitar, who is funded by Art Pope, who we call the little Koch brother in North Carolina,
wow,
has now sued the state board of election over a same-day registration and early voting, trying to get those votes not to be counted, when in fact we beat them, and the federal courts unanimously said that same-day registration and early voting is constitutional, and their attempt to take it was unconstitutional. So now they have sued their own state board. I want you to get that. They are suing themselves. The same people that are in cahoots are now suing themselves. The governor... Civitas supported the governor. Now Civitas is suing the governor's appointment to the state board of election, claiming that they're misusing the state the same day registration and early voting.
This is crazy.
It's beyond crazy, Tom. And it's because they know, and Roland and I talk about this all the time, if you build coalitions in the South where white and black and Latino people come together around a moral agenda, you can beat back this Southern strategy. They never thought they would lose. They thought they were going to ride the Trump tide, and North Carolina, we broke the back of it. Now we're prepared to sue. If they try to stack the Supreme Court, we're going to sue. If they try to take this race, they also may try to take the governor's race into the legislature, Roland, get the legislature to decide it. Now, if that happens, that's a 14th Amendment, 15th Amendment challenge that we're going to make in court, because they would then be nullifying the power of the black vote and the power of our court pro-fusion coalition. But this fight is on, brother.
Meeting today, the rally is at 5 p.m. at the state capitol.
5 p.m. at the state capitol. Everybody can come, black, white, whoever believes in justice and freedom. We need you there.
I keep trying to tell people North Carolina is the Alabama of the 21st century. Reverend Barber, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
God bless. Take care, man.
Great work.
Wow.
They're suing themselves.
That's real.
Huggy neck.
26 All right.
Past the hour.
Good job, Roland.
All right. Thanks a lot, folks. Appreciate it. Tom and Sybil, thanks a lot. I want to go back to our folks here. Joining me on my panel is Lauren Victoria Burke, political analyst, writer for NBC Black, Eugene Craig, the third vice chair of the Maryland Republican Party, A. Scott Bolden, partner here at law firm in Washington, D.C., and also Bill Fletcher. Okay, so we just had a Castro conversation, mm-hmm. and Soledad was talking about voting.
Yep.
I'm listening to Reverend Barber talk about North Carolina, and I'm going, Wow, sounds kind of familiar.
Well, it certainly does. The fight and the struggle goes on, Roland. I tell you one thing that's interesting about Fidel Castro, he can be all of those things, can he? I mean, aren't our most complex leaders, aren't us, we as individuals, we're not monolithic, or you can't put us all in one bucket. We're perfectly imperfect, and he's a revolutionary. He and Che Guevara were heroes to African Americans and people around the world because they fought around the world for those who were oppressed. Now, war and revolution is serious business, and I can't endorse how you maintain power and control over any country, if you will, but I will tell you this. History would define Fidel Castro based on who he was to each of us. He was, for African Americans, a revolutionary at a time when we were most oppressed, and supported us in all the ways that you described. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, and see, what's interesting to me about this, Lauren and Eugene, is that, again, you talk about dictator killing people.
Absolutely.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Then you talk about, okay, well, so when you hear members of Congress talk about Fidel Castro, when you read Donald Trump's statement about Fidel Castro, well, who was on the right side of history when it came to apartheid in South Africa?
Yeah, well, the thing
see, is... And that's the thing, Castro, Americans don't... So Castro actually was on the right side of history. The United States was on the wrong side of history.
The thing about Donald Trump and members of Congress is they don't care about the things that were good about Castro. So they don't care about the racism piece, the apartheid piece, any of the things that he did that was good. They really don't care about those issues, as is evidenced in North Carolina, where we don't even discuss these things. I mean, we don't even have the DOJ commenting, and they're Democrats, on what's going on in North Carolina, and frankly, what happened with the election. I mean, there are people who are trying to make the argument to some extent that the election was stolen. They don't even want to talk about that. So I'm not a big fan of talking about other countries and the things that they do, because we have issues here that we need to settle. It's certainly not as bad as death squads or stuff like that, but still, we have some issues that we need to take care of, and I don't know that we should get in the business of lecturing other countries.
You know, Castro was on the right side of apartheid. Castro was on the right side of a lot of the issues that affected African Americans around the world. But him being right on those issues do not in no way, discount firing squads. You know, does no way discount persecution for religious beliefs in Cuba. Does not discount, him hurting his people from just earning a buck.
But there was a report. Here's the problem that I have. So I'm going to use a sheet of paper. I got this. Yes. I got this. And I got this.
Yep.
This is my problem. When this is all Castro, but the discussion that we want to have, we want to say, okay, I'm going to take this one off, I'm going to take this one off, and we're only going to talk about that one. That, to me, is the problem when you want to examine who someone was.
We do that in American history all the time.
Right.
We don't want to talk about our atrocities, our things. We don't want to talk about lynchings. We don't talk about those things. We avoid those topics. So it stands to reason we'd avoid those topics when it comes to somebody. I mean,
Eugene,
firing squads, when you use massive murder as a means to control power, I mean, that goes against the entire core of what of human rights. I mean, forget American rights, human rights.
Yeah, but why don't we hear about Batista then when you talk about those firing squads? Remember, Batista came to power in a part of a coup d'etat. He has a violent history of less than
And Batista came to power, and who was he in bed with?
The United States of America.
Bill?
There were no massive killings. I mean, you know, people are using this term as if it's without question.
You don't have a million and a half people flee the country just for XYZ reasons.
Well, let's ask the people of El Salvador. Let's ask the people of Honduras. Let's ask the people of Mexico, who are fleeing their countries for economic reasons, right? People have been fleeing Cuba in two different waves. There was a first wave, which was mainly white Cubans, that left after 59. Let's be clear. Then you have, by the 1980s, a different wave of Cubans that are primarily leaving for economic reasons, fundamentally no different than Mexico. So let's just be clear about what's going on. Now, in terms of these firing squads, let's talk about who was being killed. Torturers, mafiosi, the corrupt elements of the Batista regime, a regime that was hated in the hemisphere. One of the reasons African Americans really appreciated the Cuban Revolution was precisely because of the steps that were being taken against a racist dictatorial regime. So this is why I disagreed, Roland, with Soledad. I don't think that the discussions of hypocrisy are irrelevant. I think it's really important when we're talking with the people of the United States to give context. What was actually happening? How did it actually develop? As opposed to these idiotic tweets from our president-elect.
But the U.S., last week, you could speak out against the Castro regime and be arrested for it, all right? I mean, it's not like, you know, freedom of speech or freedom of association or freedom of assembly were protected rights in Cuba, and that's the real issue here. Castro violated his people's rights time and time and time again, and he should not be celebrated for it.
But celebrate people all the time. Some of them are statues in Statuary Hall right now. We in the United States celebrate people all the time who've done things that are immoral and incorrect. So, I mean, I'm having a hard time getting outraged about what other people are doing.
Well, again, as I keep saying, the senior senator from the state of Mississippi continues to use the desk of Jefferson Davis, who was the greatest traitor in American history, and who also put folks to death as the leader of the Confederacy during the Civil War.
We have these arguments about statues of Confederate soldiers.
I was about to say that.
Everybody wants to not take
Scott, go ahead.
Lots of statues of racial segregation. Let me just say this. The reason America feeds this narrative even further is because of the white migration of Cubans here for whatever reason, for oppressive reasons, who were supporters of Batista. But let's be honest. What's our comparative foreign policy in regard to how we treat Asians versus Cubans, who in many respects are fleeing for the similar reasons, if you will. We turn them back. And yet, our policy for several years has been to embrace all Cubans who are migrating for whatever reason and to bring them into the U.S. American fold. Cool. That's a part of our responsibility in the American narrative on how we treat our brothers and sisters in the Western Hemisphere.
And speaking of how we treat our brothers and sisters, coming up next, we'll talk about a veteran who's facing racially charged death threats after speaking out about his treatment at a Chili's in Texas. Ernest Walker shares his unbelievable ordeal.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, this is a crazy story. A U.S. Army veteran was denied a meal at a Chili's on Veterans Day in Texas. Chili's, like many restaurants around the country, offer free meals to vets on Veterans Day. But at this particular Chili's in Cedar Hill, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas, the manager took the meal away from the American servicemen. Listen to this.
Question my service dog? You're questioning my service dog now. Now, you do know it's against the law, against HIPAA regulations for you to question my service dog. Do you want to read my service dog?
Sir.
Now, you questioned my military service and you questioned my service dog. And I've got, is this a certified dog, sir? No, I'm asking you a question. Is this a certified dog? Did you see my military information?
Sir.
No. Yes or no, first of all?
I am not answering any of your questions.
No. Did you see my military information?
Sir.
Did you see my military information?
Sir, you need to calm
did
down.
Did you see my military? No, I'll leave as soon as you ask my two questions.
The answer is no, I'm not answering your questions.
Okay. Did you see my military service? Did you see my military service?
Sir, no. There.
Yes, you did. Oh, so that's a lie, but you already said you did because I had that on record. Yes, you did. People right there saw you.
Didn't see it. Sorry.
Yes, you did. Well, then, if you didn't see it. Oh, you no, now you're grabbing my food away from me? Oh, you're taking my food away from me now?
I'm so sorry. I don't okay. provide any okay. documents for me.
Yes, sir. Yes, I did just provide documents to you, and they saw you. I want the police call at this point.
As you heard in the video, Ernest Walker had his military ID and discharge papers, but he was not allowed to keep his meal that day. Since the incident, Chili's has removed the manager and released a statement that says, "We personally apologize to Mr. Walker for the unfortunate experience in our restaurant on Veterans Day and thanked him for his service to our country. We also thanked him for taking the time to speak with us, and he appreciated our apology." But now Walker says things have actually gotten worse. He's received multiple death threats and has actually had to move out of his home home to ensure his family's safety. Ernest Walker joins us right now with his attorney, Lee Merritt from Dallas, via FaceTime. Ernest, first and foremost, what happened there was, now I heard different stories. Did another patron in the restaurant question whether you were a veteran? Is that what happened there?
Yes, Roland. Every time I hear that, it just brings up those emotions that I felt. There was a gentleman who was a Trump supporter, about a 70-year-old or more gentleman, who continued to walk by me and ask me questions about my service. And he even made a racially charged comment that blacks didn't serve with him in World War II. And then he walked by again as if he was going to the restroom. And then he asked my dog's name. And I told him my dog was named Barack. And he did not like that, you know. So I guess that's the worst dog name that you can have for him. And one thing led to another, and we it just escalated from there.
And so now you're receiving death threats?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me first say I've received an outpouring of support from all over the world. But there are those who have still questioned my service. You know, almost like, you know, the birth certificate of the president. You show it and it's still not good enough. There are still people that are delivering packages to my house. I've received mail. I've received threats to my dog, restricted phone calls. We've lived in this house for over 18 years. And a local news outlet screenshot my ID for my dog and broadcast it all over the world. And it was placed on Everpedia, so my address is now worldwide permanently.
Also, the reaction, obviously Chili's apologized. I understand also Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban reached out to you. Is that correct, Lee?
Yeah, that's correct. So he's, as he mentioned, he's received a lot of support from a national level. We believe that most Americans, at least in word, will get behind our veterans. But we don't think that this is an isolated incident where, you know, this was just an unfortunate something that happened to Mr. Walker. But it falls into a sort of a national narrative that since really for a long time, but it has been heightened with the election of Trump, where people feel more emboldened to question even African-American veterans or people with of different faiths or people who are of Mexican descent. And so Chili's, they responded, they apologized, but we're hoping that they will do more to help sort of move the narrative back to a place where if we're all one America, then we can all get behind our veterans and join in some of the initiatives that, like you mentioned, Mr. Cuban is getting. Mr. Walker started a Feed a Million Soldiers campaign because he's received so much outpouring of people saying, hey, let me buy you a meal, up to $6,000 of people saying, let me buy you a meal, where he gathered all that money into one place. And he's holding the event to feed several hundred soldiers in a campaign to feed a million soldiers.
All right, then. Well, gentlemen, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And we'll be watching this story for further developments. Ernest, good luck. And thank you very much for your service.
Thank you much, Roland.
All right, then. The panel, real quick, that's just absolutely crazy. But again, it shows you what it means to be black in America.
And it's not in North Carolina. It's in Texas, your home state, actually. But the reality is this. What I don't understand is the restaurant apologized. He showed his military ID. He was entitled to a free meal. What are the haters hating on?
He's black and he supports Obama.
And therefore, notwithstanding what the truth and the facts are, he has to move out of his home, you know, in 2016.
You know, I think Chili's, you know, needs to go on record and fire that manager and then take the salary from that manager and hire this guy in protective detail. They caused the issue. They should take care of the problem.
Good idea. Folks, we come back. We'll chat with Empire castmates V. Bozeman and Tobias Pavilion about upcoming projects and also the support of the Thurgood Marshall Fund. And Fit Live Win Monday, trying to get you guys healthy and well after you ate all that doggone food, Scott Bolden, for Thanksgiving. That's next. News 1 on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, Tobias Revillion, as well as V. Bozeman, both of them stars on Empire, recently sat down with them to talk about their support for the Thurgood Marshall Fund. Here's our conversation.
To listen to what I did.
What the hell are you doing?
I'm not doing anything.
What is happening?
Tracks are being erased.
No, uh-huh. No.
Platforms matter, and the reality is both of you, I mean, to be on a hit show, to be on a show that millions watch every week, how has it changed for you being on this large platform as opposed to what your life was like before?
Wow. Oh, that's a good one. You know, people love that show. You know, everywhere I go, you know, I'm recognized now. I've been working my entire adult life, you know.
And you're like, hold up, how y'all ain't recognized me before, but all of a sudden, y'all know my name.
Exactly. But it gives me access to yourself, you know. It gives me access to Thurgood Marshall, and it's a vehicle and a platform where I'm able to pay it forward or, you know, give back to the youth. So it's something that is dear to me, and it's helping me right now in my career and people recognizing me and seeing my work on a prime time. And, you know, like I said, I've been here for a while, so I'm glad that people are finally getting a chance to see my work.
Of course, now on a show, you're acting, you're not singing,
no.
You're producing.
Yeah.
But you're singing, and in fact, folks, at the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, she actually sang the national anthem.
Oh, yeah.
Black style. Check this out.
Oh, say does that star spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free?
You were riffing.
I mean,
you know. You put a little hot sauce on that thing.
Something like that. I mean, you know, the national anthem is a important statement, you know, especially when you can vocally deliver it. So that's what I intended. Well, that was the intention. And I'm like, you know what? When we gonna start doing the other national anthem?
Is there a voice to sing? Oh,
I'm
trust
telling
me.
You.
No, trust me. I was sitting there. So they had the presentation of colors. You sing the national anthem, and I was like, I know we're gonna sing the black national
exactly.
anthem.
Exactly.
So, Johnny Taylor, President and CEO of the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, I was about to send you a text at the gala, like, where's the lift every voice and sing?
Yeah.
So, I'm expecting next year at the Thurgood Marshall College Fund for that to be lift every voice and sing.
I'm ready for that one, Johnny Taylor Jr.
Of course, after Thurgood Marshall College Fund, you made a big announcement.
I was able to grant two amazing students with scholarships in my grandmother's name, Annie Lee Anderson. And it was just an honor to be able to use Thurgood Marshall, you know, the platform to honor her and to honor the students, you know, and furthering their education.
Tobias, it was also important for you to be there as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do a lot of work with the inner city kids in Newark, New Jersey. I have like an all-year-round drama program where we teach them TV production and drama. So, you know, I deal with a lot of high school kids and getting them into college. So being there at the fundraiser and raising money to get these kids into school and all the HBCUs is important, and I was happy to be there.
So what you got coming up next? What you got? What you working on? But I mean, but beyond Empire, what you working on?
Well, I'm working on... actually just did a virtual reality film, and it's geared towards the mass incarceration problem that's going on.
Okay, what was that like?
Oh my God, it was absolutely amazing. It's called. Lord, what is it called?
Tobias, we weren't in it. I'm just saying because he gave you look like I can't help you. I don't know. You didn't send me a text.
But the whole premise of the story is me being a mother, and I get caught up into some legal troubles, and I get sent away for so many years for mm-hmm. petty crimes, and you know families they get affected daily about. You know, nonsense when it has to do with, you know, petty crimes. And it's just a real great way to use my platform to uncover the truths about mass incarceration.
Now, of course, y'all, we taped this interview, so we put the name of the film at the bottom of the screen there. Mm-hmm. V didn't quite. It's early, you know, so it's a little chilly in D.C. as well. She was looking for us to bail her out, but we can't quite do that.
Left Behind.
Right. Your publicist is like, damn it, girl, the thing is Left Behind.
I'm going to get
TV show saying,
this.
Yeah, so it's called Left Behind. Now, if V get left behind, just know why she got left behind. Tobias, what you got?
Oh, man, so many things going on. I have a bunch of indie films that are going on in the film festival circuit, and I'm actually about to produce a series called Corners right now that takes place on a bunch of famous historical black famous corners, starting out in Harlem, and
really?
Then eventually it
a
travels
TV show?
Up. It will be a TV show if it gets picked up by the right people.
Really?
You know, yeah, yeah.
So what's the concept? Famous corners, but
yeah, the concept
what y'all doing?
is like a multifaceted show that entertains and educates. We follow like a main character through these historical corners,
right,
as he tries to unveil the truth behind this secret society, you know.
Okay.
And through the secret society, you know, like I say, we cover these corners. It's like we have part film noir, part drama, part history, and part like this espionage.
Well, I'm glad to have y'all stop by. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Chatting with you. Well, good seeing you as well, Miss Thang.
Me too.
All right then. So Left Behind.
Left Behind.
Virtual reality film.
Virtual reality film.
Left Behind. Don't get left behind. Forget the name, V. Mm-hmm. All right then. Tobias, V. Bozeman, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
All right, we come back. Scott didn't get left behind when it came to Thanksgiving dinner. Now he needs to work it off. Next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, y'all, celebrity trainer Jim Jones is here to talk about how do we get some of those excess pounds off for the holidays. All right, let's start off. Scott, first of all he did was eat for Thanksgiving.
Thai boxing.
He asked us.
I boxed and ate.
He can't spell Thai box.
Yeah, I can't.
So, folks, instead of trying to rush off and trying to run 30 miles today,
right,
what are some basic things folks can do right now?
You and Scott was eating together.
Who?
You and Scott. I'm like, look at y'all was eating together. Y'all was at the same table.
You're trying to come on like a fake Isaac Hayes. You better come on with your segment. Okay.
Y'all was at the same table.
I mean, don't get knocked the hell out on TV. I mean, I would advise you that. Come on, Osama.
Come on.
Come on, looking like a black Fidel Castro trying to talk about somebody.
I don't know why
you started.
I had to get you, Roland.
You
said what?
And you have more muscle.
Yeah, you know. It's gonna be great TV.
But you ain't got much brain.
Had to do it.
Trying to talk about somebody like that. Come on.
Great TV.
Come on.
No, really quick.
Come on with your Lego shirt on. Come on.
I
advise you the next minute talk about working out. Because it's going to get a little worse.
The main thing I want to drop on is consistency, Roland. I would say pick 3 key exercises that you could do at home. Maybe a push-up, a burpee, and a squat. And just stick to that every day. Keep it very, very simple.
Every day, what, 5 days a week? 7 days a week?
5 days a week. 5 days a week. Take 2 off. Do a little bit of cardio. Do a little walk.
So somebody wants to do, okay, you said a push. You said a push-up.
Not a push-up.
Burpee. That's what you saying.
You wanted to hear one push-up.
Did you not say
he wanted to hear one push-up.
Hold up.
He wanted to hear one push-up.
No. I mean, we rolled tape back. You said consistency. A push-up, a burpee. Did y'all hear A?
I did, but I
didn't hear six.
That was a starter plan for Roland.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You can't properly communicate.
Can you do one set, Roland?
Who?
Can you do one set?
You can't spell one set.
Scott, do several.
Scott, go on.
No, what I would say, I would say do 10 to 15, do three sets of that. Three sets of push-ups, three of squats, and three of your burpees.
See?
And stay consistent.
You come on here, focus on what your job was versus trying to sit here think you're going to score something.
I'm an entertainer, Roland.
Yeah,
I gotta give it to you. I gotta give it to you. All of us, Roland.
He's an entertainer. You're an entertainer?
Absolutely.
Can I ask you a question?
Okay. Without
question. How important is diet to combining with exercise, which is really key?
You got 15 seconds. I'm great.
Diet's about 70% of it. You know, a great body is made in the kitchen. I would tell people, I'm gonna make it very simple. I would say high protein, low carb. So do a meat and a vegetable. Something like that. Keep it simple so you can be consistent.
Yeah, I'm
just
gonna
like
keep
that.
It simple. I'm going to break right now. Somebody's going to be getting, and they're going to be getting cussed out in the break. News One Now on TV One, thanks to Fidel, the black Fidel Castro, sitting right here. Back in a moment. Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Got all this here trying to get some free workouts with his broke behind. Folks, Bashir Gray, his birthday is today. Of course, you just see him as a Hakeem on Empire, turns 23. All right, y'all, I got to go. I'll see y'all tomorrow with Fidel Castro. Holla!
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.